Stanley Hopkins was speechless with amazement. "I don't know what to say, Mr. Holmes," he blurted out at last, with a very red face. "It seems to me that I have been making a fool of myself from the beginning. I understand now what I should never have forgotten, that I am the pupil and you are the master. Even now I see what you have done, but I don't know how you did it or what it signifies." "Well, well," said Holmes, good-humouredly, "we all learn by experience, and your lesson this time is that you should never lose sight of the alternative. You were so absorbed in young Nelligan that you could not spare a thought to Patrick Cairns, the true murderer of Peter Carey." The hoarse voice of the seaman broke in on our conversation. "See here, mister," said he, "I make no complaint of being manhandled in this fashion, but I would have you call things by their right names. You say I murdered Peter Carey. I say I killed Peter Carey. And there's all the difference. Maybe you don't believe what I say. Maybe you think I am just slinging you a yarn."
"Not at all," said Holmes. "Let us hear what you have to say."
"It's soon told, and by the Lord, every word of it is truth. I knew Black Peter, and when he pulled out his knife, I whipped a harpoon through him sharp, for I knew that it was him or me. That's how he died. You can call it murder. Anyhow, I'd as soon die with the rope round my neck as with Black Peter's knife in my heart."
"How came you there?" asked Holmes.
"I'll tell it you from the beginning. Just sit me up a little, so as I can speak easy. It was in 83 that it happened, August of that year. Peter Carey was master of the Sea Unicorn, and I was spare harpooner. We were coming out of the ice pack on our way home, with headwinds and a weak southerly gale, when we picked up a little craft that had been blown north. There was one man on her, a landsman. The crew had thought she would founder and had made for the Norwegian coast in the dinghy. I guess they were all drowned. Well, we took him on board, this man, and he and the skipper had some long talks in the cabin. All the baggage we took off with him was one tin box. So far as I know, the man's name was never mentioned, and on the second night he disappeared as if he had never been. It was given out that he had either thrown himself overboard or fallen overboard in the heavy weather that we were having. Only one man knew what had happened to him, and that was me, for with my own eyes I saw the skipper tip up his heels and put him over the rail in the middle watch of a dark night, 2 days before we sighted the Shetland lights. Well, I kept my knowledge to myself and waited to see what would come of it. When we got back to Scotland, it was easily hushed up, and nobody asked any questions. A stranger died by accident, and it was nobody's business to inquire. Shortly after, Peter Carey gave up the sea, and it was long years before I could find where he was. I guessed that he had done the deed for the sake of what was in that tin box, and that he could afford now to pay me well for keeping my mouth shut. I found out where he was through a sailor man that had met him in London, and down I went to squeeze him. The first night he was reasonable enough, and was ready to give me what would make me free of the sea for life. We were to fix it all 2 nights later. When I came, I found him 3 parts drunk and in a vile temper. We sat down and we drank, and we yarned about old times, but the more he drank, the less I liked the look on his face. I spotted that harpoon up on the wall, and I thought I might need it before I was through. Then at last he broke out at me, spitting and cursing, with murder in his eyes and a great clasp-knife in his hand. He had not time to get it from the sheath before I had the harpoon through him. Heavens, what a yell he gave! And his face gets between me and my sleep. I stood there, with his blood splashing around me, and I waited for a bit, but all was quiet, so I took heart once more. I looked round, and there was the tin box on the shelf. I had as much right to it as Peter Carey, anyhow, so I took it with me and left the hut. Like a fool, I left my baccy pouch upon the table. Now I'll tell you the queerest part of the whole story. I had hardly got outside the hut when I heard someone coming, and I hid among the bushes. A man came slinking along, went into the hut, gave a cry as if he had seen a ghost, and legged it as hard as he could run until he was out of sight. Who he was or what he wanted is more than I can tell. For my part, I walked 10 miles, got a train at Tunbridge Wells, and so reached London, and no one the wiser. Well, when I came to examine the box, I found there was no money in it, and nothing but papers that I would not dare to sell. I had lost my hold on Black Peter, and was stranded in London without a shilling. There was only my trade left.
I saw these advertisements about harpooners and high wages, so I went to the shipping agents, and they sent me here. That's all I know. And I say again that if I killed Black Peter, the law should give me thanks, for I saved them the price of a hempen rope."
"A very clear statement," said Holmes, rising and lighting his pipe. "I think, Hopkins, that you should lose no time in conveying your prisoner to a place of safety. This room is not well adapted for a cell, and Mr. Patrick Cairns occupies too large a proportion of our carpet."
"Mr. Holmes," said Hopkins, "I do not know how to express my gratitude. Even now I do not understand how you attained this result."
"Simply by having the good fortune to get the right clue from the beginning. It is very possible if I had known about this notebook, it might have led away my thoughts as it did yours. But all I heard pointed in the one direction. The amazing strength, the skill in the use of the harpoon, the rum and water, the sealskin tobacco pouch with the coarse tobacco, all these pointed to a seaman, and one who had been a whaler. I was convinced that the initials PC upon the pouch were a coincidence, and not those of Peter Carey, since he seldom smoked, and no pipe was found in his cabin. You remember that I asked whether whiskey and brandy were in the cabin? You said they were. How many landsmen are there who would drink rum when they could get these other spirits? Yes, I was certain it was a seaman."
"And how did you find him?"
"My dear sir, the problem had become a very simple one. If it were a seaman, it could only be a seaman who had been with him on the Sea Unicorn. So far as I could learn, he had sailed in no other ship. I spent 3 days in wiring to Dundee, and at the end of that time I had ascertained the name of the crew of the Sea Unicorn in 1883. When I found Patrick Cairns among the harpooners, my research was nearing its end. I argued that the man was probably in London, and that he would desire to leave the country for a time. I therefore spent some days in the East End, devised an Arctic expedition, put forth tempting terms for harpooners who would serve under Captain Basil, and behold the result."
"Wonderful!" cried Hopkins. "Wonderful!"
"You must obtain the release of young Nelligan as soon as possible," said Holmes. "I confess that I think you owe him some apology. The tin box must be returned to him, but of course the securities which Peter Carey had sold are lost forever. There's the cab, Hopkins, and you can remove your man. If you want me for the trial, my address and that of Watson will be somewhere in Norway. I'll send particulars later."